Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. My name is Don Allen, Studio A. Over Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards on this lovely day. Mr. Edwards, how are you, sir?
I can't complain, Don. It was a beautiful day here in the Twin Cities, though it was rather chilly. But I noticed it's really started to warm up as we move into the late evening hours, so temperature is expected to hit up around the 50s and then into the 60s. Kind of a typical Minnesota spring, you know, kind of lullabies you and lures you and then slaps you, if you will.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Kind of like what's happening with the Star Tribune and people complaining. We got a lot on the platter tonight, Don. Number one, though, let me just say this very quickly because it will go to a piece that we'll be doing later on with regards to the situation in the Somali community. As we speak, Iranian warships are moving towards the American fleet stationed off of Yemen. And, boy, if there's any miscalculation, we could have some serious consequences. So want to keep that in mind. And also we'll have serious consequences with an increase in anti-Muslim, anti-Islamist opinions in this country. You know what I'm saying to you?
Oh, yes. Oh, exactly.
Yeah. But people angry and upset with the Star Tribune, man, maintaining that the Star has been unfair, inconsistent, and inaccurate in its reflections on leadership, programs, organizations, and et cetera. And, of course, as always, our phone lines are open on that. I understand that there was a meeting in North Minneapolis Monday. I understand that one of the leaders of the meeting indicated that it was an open meeting for anybody could attend. I'm not quite sure that didn't happen until after you had posted on your different websites that the meeting was taking place at 6 o'clock this past Monday evening.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Mr. Edwards. And you know, I've exhausted my resources on the web and in microfiche at the library, looking for when black people in Minnesota had an election for leadership. You know, when leadership was assigned to black people. I tell you, Mr. Edwards, I came up with nothing. Absolutely nothing. So,
you know, there's been elections, but not for a black person. When we first entered the legislature, people tend to forget that the first African-American or Negro entered the Minnesota legislature in 1899, representing a district that comprised southwest Minneapolis and part of Edina. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
And then, of course, we didn't have anybody else for the next, let me get it right, for the next almost 70 years until the very legendary Dr. Robert Lewis, a Democrat, was elected from St. Louis Park to the Senate. And Ray Pleasant, an African-American, was elected to the House from Bloomington. Isn't that interesting?
That's very interesting.
So we didn't get any black representation out of the Twin Cities until maybe another 10 years after Dr. Lewis and Ray Pleasant served in the Minnesota legislature. So your point's well taken, Don. You know, it's well taken. But still, we are told that we are to refer to them as leaders, if you will. If not, we will be chastised. So,
yes,
meetings
yes,
going yes. on. I'm just trying to get a feel for what is it that the Star Tribune has misreported. Have we figured that out yet?
You know, no, I don't think we have figured that out, Mr. Edwards, because, you know, I think that I was very, in an article that I posted online after I read the Insight News response written by Mr. Jeffrey Hassan, you know, I had to ask, what did the Star Tribune get wrong? You know, when they're questioning the integrity and credibility of established leaders and long-time established leaders, self-appointed, must add. But, you know, the thing is, you have to ask yourself a few questions. The first one is, Senator Hayden, because that's one of the people involved, who is the deputy director, the deputy minority leader of the Senate, and served on the board of...
Well, yeah, the actual title, so for our audience, is domestic, Assistant Majority Whip. Majority Whip. Yeah.
Okay, and he served on the board of Community Action in Minneapolis, and did something unethical happen? Now, the facts are the agency is closed. The agency is under investigation by some serious people. So is there a press conference going to happen? Is someone going to come out and explain, you know, this away? Because right now, you know, we have a public nonprofit news radio station here in town and on Sunday afternoons. You know, they're lobbying basically for the innocence of a particular party, a couple of senators. And by FCC rules and regulations and nonprofit rules and regulations under the FCC and the state of Minnesota, you cannot do that. And
okay.
So we have that kind of thing going on. And secondly, the Minneapolis Urban League. You know, the bill, House File 1149, was an education and employability solution for young adults who are unemployed and underemployed. And I still don't know what that means. And it was signed off on by Jeff Hayden, Bobby Joe Champion, both senators, Representative Ray Dean and Representative Will Morgan, who is Democrats in the District 56B. Now, it said this particular 13th grade was supposed to impact over 3,000 young adults, 18 to 26, placing them on a college or career pathway by 2015. Well, hell, Mr. Edwards, it's almost May. Most colleges are out, and I haven't seen any data from this. The community is not privileged to any data. Members of the Urban League have not received a newsletter stating this particular...
Well, now, Mr. Allen, I have to, from the left, this is Mr. Edwards from the left. I have to disagree with you because I had sources telling me that, first of all, Mr. Gray had indicated that he had gone through three separate audits and that he was quite comfortable that he could stand any kind of examination or scrutiny and was prepared to, quote-unquote, stand before the bar, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do assume that what has been happening is that the new leadership of the Urban League, temporary leadership, has been meeting with because the legislative auditor here in the state of Minnesota, we not only do we have an auditor who is elected by popular vote, but we have a legislative auditor who reports to the Minnesota legislature, and he... monitors all fiscal and fiduciary obligations, commitments, awards, grants, and et cetera. And he must respond, he being the legislative auditor, must respond to any request from a sitting member of the legislature to investigate the possibility of impropriety and et cetera. And so... the legislative auditor has indicated that he was contacted by, and this is kind of odd, by the assistant minority whip of the Minnesota legislature, Senator Hayden's counterpart on the other side of the aisle, to initiate an investigation of a possible fiduciary impropriety on the part of the Urban League of Minneapolis. But I had people tell me that there is absolutely nothing to that, and that there are three separate audits. And so in my newspaper column in the Spokesman Recorder, the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, I've encouraged Mr. Gray, as well as the outgoing president of the NAACP, whose office was vacated by orders of the national NAACP, to share with us their success stories that that they've been so much a part of. I mean, according to their own definition of their own success.
Exactly, and that would be nice to have that debrief for the community, so that you know we have you know something to hold on to, since you know nothing else in there is there to hold on.
And the phone lines are open. Why don't you give that number out, Don? You're getting a little bit of static there over in your studio. One of those dials I think you hit. But
let's get the
number out there. The phone lines. Want to open the phone lines because we have other issues that are very volatile and very fluid in our community right now. Particularly the some situation in the Somali community, arrest, investigations going on. In fact, we are now finding out that an eight-year investigation of activities that may be related to terrorism, recruitment, both international and domestic and homegrown, has been going on, and we all know about the arrest, but we'll address that in the second half of tonight's program. But the phone lines are open.
Yes, they are. And that number is 347-426-3904. Again, those number, the phone lines are open, 347-426-3904.
Okay. Now, we assume it do. You obviously have a over there in on your computer. You have the letter from Attorney Hassan, in which he is challenging and castigating the Star Tribune for their jaundice reporting, if you will. Does he identify what areas the Star Tribune has misspoke or
I'm actually pulling that up on another computer screen right now.
Okay.
While you talk, because it was here we go. Wow. Yeah, we have another one too. This is very interesting, Mr. Edwards. I was just looking for that, and it seems to be layered with another story, that Star Tribune article about Urban League intentionally misleads.
Is that to be in tomorrow morning's edition of the paper, or was that a previous article?
It's Tuesday, April 21st, it says here, which is yesterday. Yes, it was yesterday posted. And it's given us some... in the second paragraph, the Urban League did not break any rules, did not double bill, and has not been under fire for violating our contracts with either Minneapolis Schools or Department of Education. This purposeful vague article ignored the positive outcomes we officially recognized in both Minneapolis Public Schools and the Minnesota Department of Education. Now, that particular sentence right there, Mr. Edwards, is problematic. Because if there if there are positive outcomes, what are the positive outcomes? You know, I don't see them.
Yes, I think that's one of the discussions that's been going on. And we just want to kind of remind our listening audience that it was this time last week on these programs that you broke the story as you were monitoring the different websites that the announcement was being made that the legislative auditor, James Noble, had been ordered into the investigation of the activities of the Urban League, if you will. We really tried to get some calls last week. We wanted to hear people's observations and et cetera, because there are so many people that talk on the social blogs and social media and all of that, but then can never be found, if you will. And it's been a very turbulent week here in our beloved Twin Cities in Shangri-La, with people indicating that the major newspaper in the state, the Minneapolis Star Tribune, is picking on the colored community.
Yeah, and I do have that story up. Star Tribune declares open season on black leaders. Now they have everyone's picture in there, Mr. Hassan, Senator Champion, Senator Hayden, Mr. King, Mr. Gray, Mr. Hayden, and Mr. Al McFarland. They all have their mugshots up there, or pictures, excuse me, their photos for under this story. But I'm looking through perusing the story right now, and I am trying to find something that they specifically pinpoint. It says, to date, none of these articles published in the Star Tribune has there been any proof of wrongdoing or impropriety by any of these leaders. Okay? Again, the word leaders.
Okay.
In the cases of Senator Champion Hayden, there has been no proof of wrongdoing despite repeated Republican-led, politically motivated legislative hearings during which the numerous witnesses have been called to testify. Despite the lack of evidence, which probably will change drastically in the next 2 weeks, the drumbeat goes on, putting forth nothing more than a series of hearsay allegations and innuendos, all of which has the intent of damaging the character of the senators. And the real damage is that the general public believes this, despite the lack of proof. And, here's what I don't understand, Mr. Edwards, on this. The Star Tribune would put themselves in a position to be sued for slander and defamation of character if they didn't have something. And I think they have something, and this article was meant to try to smoke that out. But the Star Tribune is holding this ace tight to its chest. And
it appears that is a correct analysis and observation because these are powerful people that the Star Tribune has been identifying, if you will. I know that Mr. King has indicated that he will not tolerate this continued sniping, if you will, and of course, as a military person over the long military career, I mean, when he says sniping, he's putting it into a description that's a little bit different than, maybe the average Joe Blow standing on the corner.
Mm-hmm.
But, clearly I was expecting that we would see, coming out of the meeting this past Monday evening, a unified front, if you will. That's something we haven't seen since the days of the so-called civil rights movement in the 1960s, in which they would talk specifically in detail the misrepresentations that have been made, because a lot of people are asking, the same question we're asking here tonight, what are the specifics that the Star Tribune has articulated that is not consistent with facts and the truth? Now you've got James Noble involved, and man, you're really going to have to be careful if one understands and knows the history of Mr. Noble's, again, the legislative auditor for the state of Minnesota, not to be confused with the state auditor, which, as we said earlier, is an elected position. James Noble has a 25, 26-year history as the state's legislative auditor, of taking down some pretty powerful people and doing it with facts and et cetera. And I'm just hoping, for the sake of our community and the future, and particularly as it pertains to the funding for programs and et cetera, that again, leadership is prepared to deal with the allegations that have been made, not only by the Star Tribune, because the Star Tribune oftentimes has repeated statements made by the opposite side, or as the English like to say, the member opposite, if you will, and mm-hmm. in Parliament. I always think that's so classy to see how they operate. And here's what I've been puzzled by. If the Republicans have been making misstatements and erroneous allegations, slanderous allegations, and et cetera, against their colleagues, opposite member, if you will, why have not the Democrats and the two African-American senators filed a countercharge against their Republican counterparts?
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, that has not happened, and that probably will not happen.
Well, from the left, I have to disagree, Mr. Allen. I have to say I think it must be coming. I have assumed that the Democrats who still control the Senate, the Republicans control the House, but I cannot anticipate that the Democrats will not rally behind these two Democratic senators. And one of the best ways to, talk in terms of tit for tat is to, quote-unquote, file count what we call countermeasures. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just trying to figure out why that hasn't happened. I thought really on these programs last summer, as we were hearing the testimony and et cetera, I just assumed that that was going to be a step that was going to be taken by any number of white liberal senators on behalf of their two colleagues. And I'd be interesting to see what the general thinking is within our community, particularly amongst those who indicate that they are well-versed and are keen with respect to the political picture, if you will.
Yeah, Mr. Evans, we have a call.
Oh, let's get the call. Let's get the call.
Mm-hmm. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I was just calling in to listen right now. I'm Bertrand Schoberg. I'm the founder of the Black Man Stand Up Movement.
Welcome.
I was just invited to the things via Facebook, and I said I was going to call in tonight, and I'm a younger generation, and what it is going on in our streets and everything. And I'm just coming into your conversation, so I don't want to just like, excuse me if I'm apprehensive, I don't want to just like jump in and be all heavy or anything right away, because I actually called in just waiting for my turn with something to say.
You certainly have the technical latitude to listen a little bit more, and then if you have some observations, feel free to call us back.
Oh yeah, yeah, I'll chime in when I'm ready to speak, unless you guys are ready for
all
me
right
now.
All right, thank you, sir.
Okay. Sure. Yeah, just give me about 5 or 10 minutes. Call. I'll just keep you in the queue, okay? And I'll come back to you in about 5 or 10 minutes. Is that okay?
Thank you.
Okay. There we go. All right.
Okay. So again, I don't want to leave this point, Mr. Allen, from the left, if you will, that I cannot understand why the Democrats have not initiated countermeasures and laid out a bill, what is called, a bill of particulars against their Republican colleagues with respect to malicious. And there are rules within the legislature, the Senate and the House, in which a member can be called into the well, as they call it, if, in fact, that person has violated a certain decorum, if you will, of those respective bodies. And so that's what I've been looking for, because, rather than be concerned about who's saying what, let's go head to head with the people that they say are saying it, if you will. And the Star Tribune apparently has received a lot of information from the Republicans. And, of course, the Star Tribune's reporters, as I understand it, were right there at the hearings last summer, just like everyone else who could have been in attendance if that's what they'd wanted. Now, you said something earlier, Mr. Allen, from the right, kind of facetious, if you will, is that in the next 2 weeks or less, we will be getting an additional overview, because the Republicans filed a new charge about 20 days ago, and under the rules of the legislature, in this case the Senate, there must be a hearing within 30 days, and we're coming up on it, and I think that's why my colleague, Mr. Allen, was kind of facetious by saying that there could be some definite vibrations, if you will, in the next 2 weeks. In fact, I was expecting that there would be a formal announcement by the clerk of the Senate setting the specific date per the instructions of the chairwoman of the original committee, which in fact is still active in taking testimony in the allegations now that have been offered and alleged by the Republican minority in the Senate. And so, that's what I'm kind of waiting on.
Yeah, I'm just kind of sitting back, Mr. Edwards, because I'm watching the chatter, and I'm watching mostly the silence from a lot of folks that decided that they weren't going to touch this, and some of them weren't included in the spokesman, but the Insight News article as leaders who are a little bit upset. And I don't know why, but they feel that, they're one of the leaders being attacked, and without going into name and details, they're asking, again, this leadership or people that they claim is leadership has a juggernaut attached to it. Because if you look at, let's just look at the RICO Act, okay, as far as racketeering, corruption, and organized things that shouldn't be organized illegally
or
otherwise.
Yeah, conspiracy, collusion, and et cetera, yes. Uh-huh.
Okay, so if you want to look at it from that point of view and you say, okay, why is it that this group over here, political group over here, writes bills that only affect or make capital for this small group over here in Section B? It never goes out of that construct to help the whole community. It says it's to help the whole community, but they only focus on a couple of individuals, key individuals, and this has been repeated over and over.
We want to be fair now, we want to be transparent, or the organizations that they're affiliated with, correct?
Exactly, or the organizations they're affiliated with. And so there has to be more than one or two organizations in town that do this, because, you know, there's 200 and something, over 200 nonprofits in North Minneapolis alone. The duplication
But let me just cut in, though, Mr. Allen. You see, what has happened, the leaders have grown tired of hearing that continued description about how many nonprofits there are. What happened very quietly last week, according to insiders at the state capitol, is that the president of the Senate, who is a member of the Democratic Party because they are the party in power in the Senate, offered up a legislative rule that says that if your organization has not been involved for at least 4 years via your 501c3 administration, application, and et cetera, that you cannot even be considered for funding of state monies.
Wow, that's interesting.
And they did that very quietly. And I thought that the meeting Monday was going to be for the purpose of discussing that new policy. Now, maybe someone could call in, maybe some member of the Council on Black Minnesotans or such, the phone lines are open, and indicate to us if, in fact, that piece of legislation was very quietly passed and is now enforceable, if you will. Because what it basically has done is that, with the exception, let me see now, the Urban League, OIC, maybe the NAACP if they were to try to get some kind of program, Stair Step Foundation, if you will, an organization like Floor Construction, as an example, that there are really no other organizations that would appear on paper to be controlled by African Americans that would be eligible to apply for the next 4 or 5 years for state money.
Yeah.
Even the organization headed by Sandra Samuels and her husband would technically not be eligible to receive any state money. The money they receive now, of course, is federal money. But that was very quietly, allegedly, put in as a legislative rule. It was attached to a bill, and is now, if passed, it would be in effect.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. So,
I mean, this comes at a time as an example of what is happening to the African American community and the protection it should be given. Is that very quietly in the last 8 days? Velma Corville, as an example, head of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department and the overseer of the contracts and economic incentives of the city of Minneapolis, has changed the amount of capital in the form of supplies, vendor supplies, and et cetera, from $50,000 to $400,000.
Hmm.
And right now the word is, with the exception of maybe with the support of M.A. Mortensen, Floor Construction would be the only contractor that would be eligible to submit a bid to the city based on this. And what happened is that the chair of the committee that the Civil Rights Department reports to, Councilmember Bong Yang of the Fifth Ward, was not even advised that this change had been quietly and administratively made. If you go to the website of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Commission dealing with procurement and et cetera, you will see this very clever change that was made just in the last 10 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I'm pulling that up so I can post it here because that's pretty serious. There was a story on also Blogging is concerned, speaking of Blogging, is concerned about this soccer stadium that wants to come over north.
Yeah, down in the market, the farmer's market, yeah.
Yeah, the farmer's market. And he's concerned that he's saying the city should at least listen to what they have to say, which is very interesting. So I'm just
Well, you know, the ownership has met with Governor Dayton, who initially said at the inception of the announcement that there will be Major League Soccer in Minnesota by 2018, had said no way would there be public monies or any quote-unquote taking from the public coffers to build this soccer stadium right on the edge of the African-American community, in which clearly there will be no African-American participation, construction-wise, procurement-wise, or anything else. Now, I'm like you. I'm hearing a different tune. I'm hearing that maybe something can be worked out, whatever that's supposed to mean. and that possibly construction of a, I think the capacity of the stadium, based on what the surveys have shown of what the capacity is a stadium seating about 25,000. And probably costing maybe 150 to 200 million. Yeah, so things are happening, and of course I was wondering how our African American leadership was possibly involved with working with the soccer leadership, which is all white. I mean, you know, though soccer is a universal world game, if you will, played in basically all nations, if you will. But anyways, these things are happening, and they come at a time when the African-American community is basically economically and as far as inclusion are being beat to their knees, you know. And so, again, to our friend in the Fifth Ward, the councilman of the Fifth Ward, he and his staff need to tomorrow morning take a look at the ordinance dealing with procurement, what the requirements are, and et cetera, and, you know, maybe get an explanation from the Civil Rights Department on why very quietly and clandestinely, the ordinance was rewritten to take it from $50,000 to $400,000. So if you were, you know, let's say that you were a vendor, Mr. Allen, and you were selling, widgets. And you had about $100,000 worth of widgets in supply in your warehouse somewhere, and, you know, you'd bid on a contract and et cetera. Because of the change about 10 days ago, you would be disqualified because you didn't have enough assets as it pertains to, and you didn't have enough widgets. You didn't have $400,000 worth of widgets in your warehouse.
I'm looking at it right here. Goals are set on the following: goods, commodities, and supply contracts over $400,000, construction and development contracts over $100,000, professional technicals. And I'm looking at another screen where they have left, they forgot to change $50,000 to $400,000.
I know. And what happened was that my operatives have been monitoring for quite some time and have penetrated the system, brought it to my attention, and I was just stunned. But I said, well, let me wait and see if Councilman Yang is aware, because that's the committee that Ms. Corvell and her department reports to, and that is a monumental reversal of the inclusion that is talked about by Mayor Betsy Hodges and my good friend Council President Barb Johnson and my good friend Councilman Yang have been saying as it pertains to inclusion. They just wiped out everything that that one would possibly attempt to participate on, based on what my colleague, Mr. Allen, has just called up on his computer based on my recommendation that he find it and announce it. Could you read it again, Mr.
Sure,
Allen?
Sure. And I just sent a message to Blog Gang, Barb Johnson, and Cameron Gordon via Facebook.
All right.
Okay, and here it says the goals are set. Well, let me go. A small underutilized business program, SUBP, goals are set per contract based on scope, subcontracting opportunities, and availability of qualified MBEs and WMBEs, minority business enterprises, and women business enterprises. The goals are set before the project is published and are indicated in the call for bids or request for proposal document. Goals are set on the following. Goods, over $400,000, construction or development of contracts, over 100,000 professional or technical service contracts, over, they just put me out of the wind, Mr. Edwards, over $100,000. Goals are not set on the following. Goods or commodities or supplies contracts under $400,000, construction or development contracts under $100,000, professional or technical service under $100,000, which means that if the goals aren't set, they can pick who they want to, basically.
Let me say on that particular point, again, for our good friend, Councilman Yang, is that he was not made aware, and in a presentation before his committee a couple weeks ago, the Civil Rights Department made it appear that they were adhering to the ordinance that you are reading from that has been clandestinely changed, if you will. And I don't think that the council members and the council, including my good friend Barb Johnson, know that you just read it. There are no goals that are set. I've heard people like Lenny Chisholm, as an example, has been a person that has raised a lot of questions over the last number of years, along with this commentator, certainly over many, many years. In my case, of course, I was one of the articulators and drafters of the language of the Civil Rights Department, and et cetera. But no goals are being set. And white vendors and contractors are being told they don't have to worry about doing anything as it pertains to minorities or protected classes. And so when the councilman and his colleagues raise questions about the participation of the disadvantaged community, they get this blank look like, yeah, the opportunity is there, but it's not. And then when you begin to cleverly change language, and I certainly heard what you just said, Mr. Allen, you have discovered the fact that the operation was so shoddy that on one segment of the ordinance, they forgot to change the number.
Yeah. I'm looking at it right now. I'll get back to that. I'm sending this message to the whole city council because they are not even aware of this.
No, they're not. They're not aware. I was in the city council chambers today on another matter dealing with the issue of public safety and the problems that we have. It was quite clear that as I looked at the agenda, that they had no clue. See, notification should have been given to the council. In fact, there should have been a public hearing with regards to the change, and I think the councilman, the chairman of the committee, would concur with Mr. Edwards, if you would. There should have been a public hearing, and there should have been a formal presentation to the council. And actually, Ms. Corvell and her associates had an opportunity to do that because they made their fourth quarter report for 2014. Hell, it was only about 4 months late, but they just made that a month ago. And they should have reported to the councilman's committee, the public safety committee, that they were making these changes, making a drastic change, which would basically, with the exception, as we said, maybe Thor Construction, that no African-American business would be able to even begin to compete. And what is interesting about this, if I may, Mr. Allen, because we do have some of the Somali issue, which I'm getting text messages saying how serious is that I remember well the testimony of Robbie Norman, our good friend, the chief operation officer of Thor, before the United States Advisory Committee to the United States Civil Rights Commission at St. Thomas University in downtown Minneapolis. And I remember how he was ranting and raving and angry about how he and other black contractors and et cetera were being shut out. And he was declaring and calling for corrective action and et cetera. And I was kind of surprised to hear him on an urban station this past Sunday indicating once again it looked like things were going pretty good. But there were some problems with people being hired, and I was surprised by that because just a year ago, Mr. Norman had been on this same program, and he and the host, everybody else, was saying how great things were and how many black folks were working at the stadium. You remember that?
Yeah.
Because all those broadcasts are in fact being taped. So, anyways, I appreciate that my colleague from the right has to text our friends in the Minneapolis on the Minneapolis City Council because they knew nothing about it.
Oh, we.
Yeah.
That's ugly.
They knew nothing about it, Mr. Allen. Again, that phone line, let's give that number. The phone line is open. We're going to 9:30. Is that correct, Mr. Allen?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Okay.
That phone number is 347-426-3904. And the brother that called back, called earlier, if you'd like to call in, you know, I'll put you in the queue and we'll get you in about 5 minutes, but you're welcome to call back. That's 347-426-3904. Okay.
Right. We are obligated to talk in terms of the situation with the Somalis. I have to tell you, Mr. Allen, that there is great consternation and concern that we are looking at a very serious situation of allegations of black Americans being involved in conspiratory efforts now to join with these groups that are talking in terms of training, some cases staying in the Middle East and Syria and Yemen and places like that, and in some cases returning here to the homeland, if you will.
Yeah.
This is very serious. The federal authorities are doing it how they want to do it. You know, they have had a special federal task force has been in here for 8 years. Investigating, setting up conditions, if you will, countermeasures and et cetera. And I just don't know that a lot of our brothers from East Africa understand that they're being played. I really don't. I don't think that they understand what is happening. You know, we talked about it on this program a year and a half ago. The red flag went up when that building blew up on Cedar Avenue on January 1, 2014.
At
this particular point. The two of the gentlemen that were killed in that explosion on the third floor of that building had just returned from Africa, from Kenya. There has been some rather interesting reflections on who they were and what they were actually doing up there on the third floor that morning when it appears that a explosive device prematurely detonated. Okay?
Yep, prematurely. Yep. And it wasn't a gas explosion. Because, you know, remember, Mr. Erwitz, I was telling you about that. I went to chemistry professors to ask him.
Yes,
and
we assigned you to that.
And we talked to them. Yes. We showed them the picture on Google Maps before and showed them the picture afterwards.
Right.
And they said, this is not a gas. I said, the gas explosion, the two people outside the store in front of it would have been killed. Because it would have blown up.
The building would have blown outward. It would have exploded outward. The gas company here in Minnesota, in this area, is called CenterPoint. They refused and in fact, professionally showed that it was not a gas explosion. And that kind of set back the narrative that had been in place, if you will, to make it appear it was a gas explosion, when in fact it actually, it is said in some quarters that it was a retaliation for the participation of a couple of people who lost their lives, who had been involved in the carnage in Nairobi at the East Lake Mall a couple months before. There are some real ties to what is going on. Now you have the FBI on the move. There will probably be additional arrests, and there are some African-Americans, if you will, who are persons of interest.
Uh-oh. That's not not good at all, actually. Actually, that sucks.
No, it's not. No, it's not. In some cases, some people talk too much, and folks did not recognize that a year ago that a federal operative was brought into the country, was positioned here in the Twin Cities, and was involved with, shall we say, association, affiliation, and fraternization, and picked up some significant information with regards to what was being discussed in the black community radicalization of the young African Americans. Go ahead, Mr. Allen. We got something?
I was just going to say, that's what happens when you put a pretty girl in the mix. Oops. Well, anyway.
Yeah. What folks have to be reminded is that the federal government has had an ongoing anti-terrorism surveillance operation 8 years. I mean, that's a nice period of time, you know. And when you go that long, you can set in place the countermeasures. And then you are able to develop your own operatives, if you will, moles. So anyways, we watched that with great consternation as it pertains, because we have already in the African-American community lost a couple of young men a couple of years ago as it pertains to the conflict in that part of the world. And no one really wants to talk about who it was. Let me say this also for our NSA friends. Don't you find it interesting in the article in the Star Tribune a couple of days ago that the U.S. attorney, talking in terms of how the kind of travel that is going on and situations, not in the case of these six young men, because they had them so bottled up that they couldn't even get out of the country. But don't you find it interesting that the U.S. attorney did not talk in terms of who is the paymaster? Who is the person that has been handling the money and the funds that these young men, maybe as many as 50, have had access to to do the things that they're doing? You know, normally, you know, if you're talking about like the RICO Act and organized crime and et cetera, they would identify someone who was the paymaster. You know what I'm saying, Don?
Yes.
And if you notice, the feds did not indicate who the paymaster was. They also made a rather interesting statement and said that there is no master recruiter in Minnesota recruiting these young men or coordinating the conditioning, if you will. We used to call it in the old days brainwashing, if you will, of these young men. That was rather interesting. Like I said, you feel after 8 years that the federal government has a lot of dossiers. Oops. You know, they got a lot of wiretaps, you know. So these are the way things are going. But again, those phone lines were open. What do we got, Don? About 13 minutes left.
We do have a call, but in the meantime,
let's get the call.
Just before I go to that call, Ms. Erwitz, I need to go back and let you know that the there was a story just posted with Congressman Ellison. It's titled, "Ellison, Worry About the Young People in Dark Corners, Not the One Arrested." It's in the Star Tribune, just posted. Also, 43 minutes ago, the Minnesota Film and TV Board under scrutiny after legislative auditor raises concerns. So he's he's an equal opportunity investigator. And before we go on a lighter note, before we go to our caller, actress Sandra Bullock is named People's Most Beautiful Woman, and I couldn't agree more. Caller, you're live on the air. Your name, and go ahead and ask your question or make a comment, whatever you'd like to do.
All right, I'm Marcus Schober. I'm founder of the Black Man Stand Up Movement, and I've been listening to this for a while. I called earlier, and I didn't want to jump in the conversation until I knew the exact latitude of this. I'm not from the right or the left. I'm from the block, gentlemen. Mm-hmm. And I am a leader in this community that don't got none of this government funding. I'm grassroots. I do all this stuff off of my own little money that I make and I have left over from supporting my family as a sole supporter of my family. Mm-hmm. Collar, for middle class America. And the fact of the matter is that I'm on the front lines out here, and these cops are killing our babies. I'm one of the people who go up there and yell at the cops and tell them to quit killing our babies. And our black leaders, I'm wondering, what are we going to do to address this? I have to go ahead. I'm in Arizona right now. I'm on vacation. Next week I get back. I have three to 5 days to organize a meeting to teach our people how to defend ourselves against the cops that have their own agenda within the margins and constitution of the laws of this land, whether it be legally or physically if we have to, and this stuff is not addressed. While we're yelling Black Lives Matter in the Mall of America, we're not yelling it in North Minneapolis. We're turning away, we're looking away from the problem that's right there at home. And nobody's going to take us seriously out here in the streets until we can hit the streets and hold up signs to say, quit killing our kids. You know what we went through to get them to stop killing each other.
Yeah.
So if Black Lives Matter, all the way from the top to the bottom where I'm at right here, right, then where's this money going to go ahead and stop the crime prevention? And why racism is something that is economically written into the law to hold a group of people back. And you guys just explained that to me on how black people can't get a contract for their construction businesses to build a soccer stadium that we don't even need.
Right.
You got them building two stadiums. This is ridiculous. And we're still out here. We're still North Minneapolis. This is what happens in North Minneapolis. North Minneapolis became a gold mine. I saw pictures of North Minneapolis way back in the day when Broadway was pretty prosperous and everything. This is what happens to the typical person who lives in North Minneapolis, the working class. They go to work. They cash your check at the unbank. The unbank gets their tax money off of that check. It goes into their bank account and leaves that community. They may stop at the liquor store, grab a brew or two. Been a long day at work. That money goes in the bank account, leaves that community. They run across the street, run across Broadway over to Cub Foods. The money goes in that corporate bank account and leaves that community. They stop and they get gas. The money goes to that person's bank account and leaves that community.
Mm-hmm.
This is what Malcolm X was talking about 50 years ago and Marcus Garvey was talking about 100 years ago. And we have these black leaders out here that are supposed to be our leaders. How come we ain't catching on? We took a wrong turn back there somewhere.
Yeah, that's what Mr. Allen and myself have been talking about for a long time. Let me ask you a question. You say you're now vacationing right now in Arizona. Were you here when Ms. Harris was shot by the Robbinsdale police a week ago?
That happened 2 days after I left.
Oh, okay.
I was reading. It took me 2.5 days to get here. I took the bus. I was reading about that when I hit Texas. I was in Texas when that happened.
Okay.
I'm like, oh my goodness. You know, cops have a whole utility belt like Batman. And it seems that this, that since we've been holding our hands up saying, hands up, don't shoot, which I just saw a statue that was in Tulsa, Oklahoma, of a brother that was being hauled off with his hands up, and the word underneath that statue was humiliation. So I think the joke's on us, to be honest with you. They've been killing us even more since then and getting a paid vacation. You know what I mean?
Because of the electronics and cyber and et cetera, we're just more for me. I have to tell you, young brother, they've been killing us like this for a long, long time, but we now have a system of quicker communication, and so we are more alert to the fact that it's happening. But I have to tell you, my brother, I came out of the 1960s, if you will, and they were killing us like this back then too. But appreciate your observations. We look forward to your return back here to Minnesota. Feel free to give us a call upon your return and let us know some of the things that you and your organization is doing.
You got it.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it. Thanks for the call.
All right. Thank you. All right. Well, interesting observation by the young man.
Yes, I would say.
Yeah. He talked in terms of a Minneapolis and a black community that used to be vivacious and et cetera. Mm-hmm. And actually, I take him back even beyond Broadway. I take him back to the days of 6th Avenue North. Oops. And mm-hmm. 6 blocks of black commercial businesses and et cetera. But we've talked about that before. But because we don't have a black museum and we have no point of reference, Mr. Allen, you've oftentimes written about that in some of your reflections in the Oracle and et cetera, people don't know the history, you know.
Yeah.
At one time we were a very vivacious economic community. We lost all of that, starting with the urban renewal in 1952-53, and then after the uprisings and the disturbances of 1965, 66, 67, and 68, we found ourselves stripped of both our economic and, to some degree, political power. Yeah.
Yeah, Mr. Harris, we have another call.
Oh, sure. Let's get him. All right.
Caller, you're live on the air, and welcome.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. This is Mr. M.
M, how you doing?
How you doing? Yeah.
Good, good, good. Sorry that I couldn't get to you guys earlier, so I haven't heard a lot of the earlier conversation, and it's quite possible. I mean, I'm pretty sure you talked about something that is something that I wanted to talk about, and that has to do with the, the four terrorist individuals that
four here, two in San Diego, but they were all part of the same cell. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I wanted to talk about that because. There was a very interesting point in that. You know, they had the big article in the paper today. I'm sure you gentlemen saw that in the paper. It's some people call it the Johannesburg Times. I mean, the Minneapolis Star and Tribune.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a quote there from one of the community activists from the, Somali community.
Mm-hmm.
And his quote was, basically saying, we're not all like that. And that's certainly like any group of people, you are going to have different ideologies, different thoughts, different personalities, what have
okay.
you. You're going to have differences among people. So, I mean, I certainly understand that. But one of the things that I'll read a quote from this community activist who said, Muslim religion is a peace religion. America gives us residence, health insurance, food stamps, school, jobs, opportunities for business. Why do they go to Syria? It's no good. And my only question to that is, well, why does America give them all of that? Why do they deserve to have things in abundance that, those that are born and bred and raised in this country and have...
And fought for this country.
And been the ancestors of those that have fought for this country and generational. Mm-hmm. But yet and still, there's individuals that come here, and I mean, he named it right. Gives us residence, health insurance, food stamps, schools, jobs, opportunities for business.
Mm-hmm.
I have two sons, and I had to work, my wife and I, two jobs at times to keep them in school, college, and to get make sure they had a good education. No one gave us anything. No one gave us the housing. No one gave us the food, the jobs. Had to stay up nights to earn degrees and earn things so that I could get these jobs. So I'm trying to figure out what is the justification for bringing and bestowing all of these gifts and all
Let me just kind of cut in because we're down to like the last 3 minutes, but this is a very, very crucial question, particularly in light
of... Oh, Mr. Edwards, I have 15 more minutes approved, so yeah, I'm sorry.
Oh, thank
it just
you.
Popped
okay,
up.
Well, let me...
Yes,
and
cool.
I appreciate
cool.
we have 15 more minutes. Okay. The question that needs to be asked on what you just articulated... should be asked of Congressman Keith Ellison. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
He was one of those, when he ascended as the first Muslim elected to the United States House of Representatives of the United States Congress, he was very appreciative of the vote that he received from the so-called immigrant population in a portion of the 5th Congressional District. And I can well remember as he was traveling overseas to Saudi Arabia, he did make one visit to Gaza and things like that. I remember he was articulating, in great depth, the importance of reaching out and extending a hand to these individuals. Yet, on the other hand, people have been concerned that the congressman has been so quiet on domestic things that are happening within his own congressional district that he's not spoken out on.
Well, the reality is, I mean, he's elected official of this community, okay?
That's
and his
right.
His first priority is to this community. And again, he has the broader community to the protection and the services to the whole United States of America because he sits on that position. But his constituency is right here among us.
Uh-huh.
And his first priority should be that this constituency here gets their due. You pointed me in the right direction by saying that the questions that I pose should be posed to him.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, let me also say this, that we did talk about possibly before you caught us. We, right at the top of our program this evening, made reference to what could be an impending global conflict with regards to the Iranian naval vessels that are moving towards the American naval vessels off the coast of Yemen in the Arabian Sea. I said to my colleague, Mr. Allen, in the production meeting this afternoon, that if there is a conflict and there are casualties, if you will, if the two fleets should in fact engage, that you will begin to see an increase in anti-Islamic, anti-Muslim hatred in this country that will be unprecedented. Mm-hmm. And so I said to my colleague, Mr. Allen, that in light of what is happening with the Somalis and what is happening with some of our African immigrants and et cetera, that they're getting ready to see the real version of America. And it is not America the Beautiful, particularly when it has to do with the issue of race, if you will. I'm very, very concerned, gentlemen, with regards to this potential conflict in international waters, if you will. The Iranians are not intimidated by the United States, and they do have certain capabilities, though in an overall matchup, they are not going to be able to best the American naval forces, but they can inflict damage. You let one American destroyer be hit, 25, 40, 100 young seamen and sea and the women are lost at sea, and et cetera. You're going to see a backlash in this country that is not going to be very pretty, gentlemen.
Well, I think you've been, you know, in particular you, Mr. Edwards, have been pretty much warning us of these things for a number of, years now, about these impending things that are going on overseas, these political things that, you know, we sit here in our, as there was a gentleman that called our great Shangri-La, we sit here, and we don't have the concept of really what's going on in the world until all of a sudden, but these things are continuing to brew. They're continuing to brew in different spots. They're continuing to brew here, and they're boiling over here and boiling over there. And it has an effect here. And some of the things we don't see on a daily basis and won't see because we're getting such filtered information and being fed what we want to hear, what we've been told we need to hear. We've been given only a smidgen of what is really going on, and so that's why we have to listen to programs such as this.
And we are appreciative of our listeners. We're appreciative of the comments, but we are appreciative of the fact that we are in a position to even talk about it because, you know, one of the questions, gentlemen, on this situation in the Arabian Sea as we speak is that how in the hell did that come about? And at what point, really, were the Saudis commissioned, if you will, to carry out air strikes and an air campaign inside of Yemen, another sovereign nation under the guise of protecting the interest of Saudi Arabia? And was it not anticipated in that the Houthis were acting as a proxy for the Iranians, just as we have groups acting as proxies for the United States and Europe and et cetera. Why did the planners and bankers in Washington, D.C., why did they not see the impending danger of the Iranians protecting their assets just like the United States and European nations protect theirs? I just don't understand the absence of deep thinking and a deep understanding of the world platform, if you will, of the world stage. Really concerned, gentlemen, but anything else, Em? Appreciate your observation, man.
Well, you know, just, you know, to kind of flip the script a little bit, only just, you know, back here in our community here in the Twin Cities, I had heard that there's some rumblings about the NAACP. I don't know if you gentlemen have already talked about that or...
Oh, we touched on it, and I will indicate that my colleague, Mr. Allen, is a candidate for office in the election on May 2nd You know, just to be clear again, we repeat that the national NAACP vacated all of the offices of the Minneapolis branch.
Okay, now, but do the current officers, are they agreeing with this vacate situation?
They have no choice.
So are they abdicating? Are they going to abdicate their positions, or are they continuing to perform?
They've been removed. They've been ordered that they cannot speak and do anything on behalf of the NAACP. In fact, Mr. Allen, who is a card-carrying member, received a letter to that effect back on, what was Mr. Allen, the 5th of April?
Near the beginning of the month. Yes.
I
did receive that letter that said that the I'm actually searching through the files here in the studio to see if I could just pop it out real quick.
I could remember it by recall that the letter clearly indicated that all offices had been vacated by orders of the national NAACP and that a special election, that's key, another special election, which people can come in off the street, pay their, what is it, $25, Mr. Allen?
$35.
Well, that's my question. That's my next question. How do people get on the ballot? I mean, is there a process?
Nominated from the floor.
So in other words, being present that day at that time.
Yes. See, that is the trick, because on December 13th, 2013, Mr. Allen, as a candidate, was made familiar with the rules. The one thing that has happened, if you're a nominator from the floor, you must be present to accept that nomination. And so that's what's going to happen at the old Pilot City, now North Point, in North Minneapolis, across from the soon-to-be-closed-down Urban League. You will have to be present, but you can be nominated from the floor. Mm-hmm.
And the date on that and time of that election, do you have that?
May 2nd at 5 o'clock. Is that correct, Mr. Allen?
Yes, May 2nd at 5 o'clock at 1313 Penn Avenue at North Point. Yep.
Yes.
5 p.m. And to vote, it's necessary to have paid your membership?
You can pay it right there.
Okay. Let's do the hypothetical. You arrive and park. You go into the facility. There will be a table. There will be members primarily of the St. Paul NAACP and the State Conference NAACP under the control of Mr. W.C. Jordan. You will indicate that you are requesting two things, a membership, and then you receive that membership right there. You are given a piece of paper. And then you move on, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Allen, and the people with the ballots are pieces of paper for you to write down who will be nominated. You then take a seat. At some point, Mr. W.C. Jordan, unless Reverend Ford himself comes here from Baltimore, Mr. Ford, by the way, is the director of branches, if you will, they will announce a time certain, let's say 5:30. That the nominations will start, nominations will be made, and then at the point that the parliamentarian decides that the nominations have been exhausted, nominations will be closed, and you will go to a written ballot. And then the officials of the state conference, the regional director of this region will probably be here, as well as one of the national board members. They will then count the votes based on the positions. The positions, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Allen, are president, vice president, president, first vice president, second vice president, secretary, treasurer, and that is the membership committee, excuse me, the exec committee. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for that information. I've jotted that down, and I'm actually penciling that into my calendar to see if that's something that I could attend.
Yes. 5 o'clock, May 2nd, as Mr. Allen pointed out, that's 1313 Penn, correct, Mr. Allen?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
It has to be open to the public because that is a county facility.
Mm-hmm.
And so, does the NAACP have a brick and mortar building?
No.
They have no brick and mortar building. They have
no space.
To whatsoever.
Your question, they have no assets. In fact, I'm not sure they even have an office anymore. I think that their office had become New Salem Baptist Church in North Minneapolis.
Oh, yeah. Boy. No,
and Mr. Edwards, we do have another caller holding.
All right. All right. We want to get that call in him. We want to thank him. We hope that information has been fruitful. Thank you.
All right. Caller, go ahead. You're live on the air. What's your name and your question, please?
Yeah, my name is Tom. Just want to let you guys know that I really appreciate your show, all of the great information that you provide to the community. Just want to let you know and just keep up the good work. But I did have one comment in regards to the international scene, in regards to Iran. And my question basically is, do you have any ideas as far as, is there any way that us as African-Americans and I would say the ethnic community would be able to take advantage of some of the opportunities that may come about of the exchange and the agreement between Iran and the United States? You know, obviously, it's the African-American president who is pretty much putting forward, you know, to create
right,
this type
let,
of
let me cut in. I understand right what you're saying, sir, if you would, Mr. Allen. First of all, if there is a military confrontation in the Arabian Gulf, if you will, the negotiations on the nuclear deal is what you're talking about will disappear. And it will probably not regain momentum for another 20 years. That's how serious this potential conflict is. Now, let's say that everything goes okay and calmer heads prevail and the Iranians turn back and there's no conflict and Secretary Kerry continues negotiations, and in June they finally get an agreement and the Congress doesn't disrupt it, and et cetera. There could possibly be a small economic windfall for the African-American community, but most of it is sided towards the Iranians who are, as you, I think you know, sir, are interested in getting those sanctions lifted.
Correct.
Now, does that mean that the Iranians will then, as a show of solidarity, talk in terms of doing some business with African-American businesses and companies? It certainly would be a possibility, but Black American leadership must show the vision of doing something that Louis Farrakhan did with Muammar Gaddafi at 20 years ago until the government shut that whole situation down. Of reaching an economic agreement with Libya, who was prepared to place $2 billion into the African-American economy. Of course, that was sabotaged, submarined, and et cetera. Your question has a lot of possibilities and validity to it. But if there's a conflict in the Arabian Gulf, you can forget about nuclear agreements and anything else, and it's going to be hell to pay. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot of leverage there with $50 to $100 billion on the line for the Iranians. I guess those are funds that is frozen in some of the different offshore accounts. So, and also I think the value of the Iranian rial was at $3.20 before some of the sanctions was imposed. And I was wondering whether or not it would be, once the sanctions are lifted by the banks, whether or not that same value. Obviously, they're a little different than Iraq. Iran basically is a reinstate, whereas Iraq would probably have to revalue their currency.
You're absolutely correct on that question of economics, and that would be up to the International Monetary Fund, IMF, and, of course, the big major Western banks led by not only the United States but China, Russia, if you will, the European Union,
right,
and et cetera. So these are things that could be thought about, but I submit and maintain again, if there is a conflict in the next 4 to 5 days involving American, her allies, as she is, as they've identified, and the Iranian task force that is now approaching American warships, you don't have to worry about anything happening other than there will be serious backlash both internationally and inside the United States.
Okay, thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you
all
very
right.
much.
Well, Mr. Allen, we basically, taking it, appreciate getting that additional time. Thank our friends at Blog Radio. You know, we've done, what we could to lay it out, and we appreciate the calls. We seem to have some different voices, too, if you notice.
Yes, that's really good to have some different people.
Yes.
So we appreciate everyone calling. We'll be back next Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Central Standard Time, and we invite you to tune in. And the phone lines, as always, will be open.
Right. Let James Brown take us home.